Chapter 8. Needless to say, the decision to continue our assignment was far from universally popular, although no one apart from Logash voiced any dissent. Griffin and her team were professional enough to understand the necessity of ensuring the safety of our comrades, not to mention ourselves, and so we pushed on in uneasy silence. The only sounds were the crunching of our boot soles and the thick frost that still coated the tunnel floor and the tech priest's sotto voce imprecations. Besides which, no one in our party could have been more reluctant to proceed than me. You can depend on it. Every instinct of self-preservation I possessed urged me to flee the caverns at once and find some excuse to board the first shuttle back to the relative safety of the Pure of Heart. "Commissar?" Jürgen asked, and I suddenly became aware that I was murmuring one of the catechisms of command under my breath, something I swear I'd never done consciously since leaving the Scholar. Just goes to show how spooked I was. "Nothing," I said hastily, hawking a gob of rapidly cooling phlegm into the encircling darkness. "Just clearing my throat." "Oh, right." He nodded in his usual imperturbable fashion and walked on, melter already across his body. Logash gave me a nasty look. "Fear is the mind killer, hmm?" he asked, which at least told me his hearing was preternaturally augmented. "I think you've already proved that today." I could hardly believe it. Here we were, caught between two of the nastiest foes you could ever hope not to meet, and he was still sulking about not being allowed to loot the bloody tomb. "At least I've still got enough of mine to know I ought to be scared," I snapped back. We glared at each other like pre-scholar Jews, whose vocabulary is too limited to prolong an exchange of verbal abuse, and for all I knew, we'd have descended to shoving and finger-poking if Hale hadn't cut in my combead. "I can see light up ahead." A shiver of apprehension shot through me. We were still deeply underground, and although the tunnel floor had been rising gently for the last couple of kilometres, my natural affinity for these conditions told me we should be nowhere near the surface. "Hold position," I ordered, my irritation with the truculent tech priest already forgotten, and hurried forward to join her. Jürgen's familiar odour followed, and we overtook Lund and Simla. The big heavy weapons specialist watched as we passed and began to ready his flamer, which, now we were in front of it, was rather less comforting than his show of initiative might otherwise have been. As we approached Hale's position, I clicked off my luminator, and a moment later Jürgen did the same. As was my habit, I closed my eyes as we did so, knowing my dark vision would adjust a little faster. For such things can mean life or death in these situations, and all too often do. To my relief, Hale had doused her own light, either from training or common sense, so there was nothing to impede my perceptions as I moved up to join her. "Over here, sir." The whisper came from one of the deeper shadows into which the woman had blended almost invisibly. Her skin was very dark, almost the colour of recaf, and she used this natural advantage to the fullest.
"One, this was extremely unusual for a Valhallan. Perhaps as a result of living underground, they generally tend to have the lightest of complexions. Hale's coloration is the norm on many other worlds in the sector, however, where the white skin typical of her home world would seem equally unusual, so it's probable that an ancestor or two of hers settled there after relocating, for some reason."
As she moved, her silhouette came into focus, backlit by a soft greyish radiance from somewhere further down the tunnel. I sighed with relief. I'd been dreading the sight of the sick greenish glow which had permeated the Necron tomb I'd penetrated before, and the realization that whatever we were coming to had nothing to do with them hit me with an intensity akin to euphoria. "Any sign of movement?" I asked, and Hale shook her head, a barely visible motion in the darkness which I sensed as much as saw. "Nothing yet," she said. "Good." I stood still for a moment, letting my tunnel rat senses attune to this change in our environment. As my eyes adjusted fully, the pale glow seemed to strengthen, a faint irregular disc about the size of my thumbnail, throwing the darker stone around it into stark relief. And there was a faint current of air on my face too, sharp with the smell of coal and heavy with damp. Impossible as it seemed, it looked very much like a fissure to the surface. "I think this is it," I concluded. "Surely we're far too far underground," Logash queried at my elbow. Lost in my reverie, I hadn't noticed him tagging along, and I started, momentarily, to his unconcealed amusement.
"Could be the bottom of a crevice," Jürgen volunteered.
It sounded plausible to me, and he had grown up on a world like this, so I nodded. "That would explain our dead orc," I said. "It just fell down into the tunnels here. Maybe the fall had killed it and the amble who brought it home just got lucky, although in my experience it would take more than dropping a few hundred metres down a hole to finish off a greenskin for sure, especially if it landed on its head." "So this whole expedition has been a colossal waste of time," Logesh concluded. I shook my head. "Far from it. If one orc found the hole, others could, and they can climb down a rope just as easily as any other species. That's not entirely true, of course. They're clumsy brutes at the best of times, but they're determined and resilient, and sometimes that's enough." "Best go and check it out, then," Hale said, more for the pleasure of contradicting the tech priest than supporting me, I suspected. But the display of solidarity was welcome nevertheless. "I think so," I said, and moved on, the others taking up their positions around me as we continued on towards the gradually intensifying glow. As we got closer, the faint current of air grew stronger, and the almost tolerable low temperatures of the tunnels began to drop rapidly, so that I found myself shivering again, even through the thick weave of my greatcoat. "Smells like snow," Griffin said cautiously. "We must be getting close." I was prepared to take her word for it. After all, she knew snow and ice the way I did tunnels. I was mildly surprised to see even the stoic Val Hallen pulling a greatcoat just a little tighter. If I could trust her instincts as strongly as I believed, that didn't augur well. In the event, we were even closer than we realised. We turned a corner, skirting an outcrop of some deeply veined rock I didn't bother listening to Logesh identify, and the full force of the blood-chilling cold I'd experienced after the shuttle crash hit me in the face, along with a weak shaft of sunlight which seemed almost dazzling after the gloom of the tunnels. "Emperor's bowels," I said, pulling my scarf up over my mouth and nose, feeling sharp shards of pain skitter through my abused lungs. Somehow, incredibly, the amble tunnel had broken the surface, hundreds of metres deeper than should have been possible, but we were undeniably outside again. "Interesting," Logesh said, not even shivering. "Emperor rot his augmented hide. Snow whirled in around us, stinging our eyes and obscuring everything in front of us from sight." He pondered for a moment. "Perhaps a small valley cutting into the mountains." I considered it. Overlaying a rough estimate of our position on the orbital images I'd seen in the Pure of Heart's hololithic bridge display, it was perfectly possible that we'd come right through the heart of the ridge forming one of the sides of the valley protecting the refinery complex and found ourselves at the bottom of a defile of some kind that cut into it from the other side. If so, that was both good and bad news. Bad in that there was indeed a way through our tunnels which breached our defences, but on the plus side would be a long way from the main body of the besieging orcs. The only ones this far down the other side of the ridge would be stragglers or scouting parties like the one we'd encountered before. Even shivering as I already was, the thought was enough to send an additional chill through me. There was no telling how many such groups had struck out ahead of the main advance, and if one had already discovered the tunnel entrance and reported back, the entire army could be on its way to take advantage of it.
One. Not that many, in all likelihood. Commandos, as they're known, a loan word from some human culture according to the Ordo Dialogus, as orcs aren't able to conceptualise anything to do with subtlety for themselves, are quite rare among the greenskin forces. Most lack the patience or, to be blunt, intelligence for anything other than a brute force frontal attack, which makes these occasional exceptions a danger out of all proportion to their limited numbers, as they generally succeed in taking their targets completely by surprise.
Well, perhaps not that many, but a large enough force to cause us some real problems if they got loose behind a defensive line. Not that it was going to hold for a second once the Gargant arrived, of course, so I was just having to thumb my palm that Castine had come up with some strategy to deal with it while we were running around in the tunnels.
Two. A good luck gesture Kane appeared to have retained from his early childhood, wherever that was actually spent.
Tracks. Mago was kneeling on the ice a few metres back from the curtain of whirling snow, staring at it intensely. I couldn't see a thing myself, but once again I found myself putting my full confidence in the Valhallan's natural affinity for these dreadful conditions. Griffin moved to join her, squatting beside her friend. "Looks like," she agreed. "Orc boots, I'd say." "How many?" I managed to ask, through the muffling scarf and my rapidly numbing facial muscles. Margot shrugged. One pair? She didn't sound terribly sure. The floor's chewed up around here, something awful. One orc, Logash confirmed, scanning the floor with his metal eyes, a hint of impatience entering his voice. And amble tracks. The greenskin must have wandered in, disturbed it, and ended up as lunch. Only one orc? I asked. You're absolutely sure? Of course, Logash said. It's completely clear to anyone with the right eyes to see these things. Normally, I'd have found the hint of the typical tech priest arrogance returning to his voice irritating, I admit, but at the time, it almost came as a relief. I assumed it meant he was getting over his sulkiness, but I had more pressing concerns to consider. Then what happened to the others? I wondered aloud. Orcs were obnoxious and quarrelsome, but they were curiously sociable in their own brutal fashion, and our solitary amble victim wouldn't have been out here alone. True, his friends wouldn't waste all that much time looking for him once they noticed he was missing, but they might still be in the vicinity. And that meant they could stumble in here just as easily as their erstwhile companion. A good question, Logash conceded. I suppose you'll want to scout around and make sure there are no more of them outside. Well, actually, that was the last thing I wanted to do, but it was necessary, and I couldn't back down in front of the troopers now that someone had verbalised the thought. So I nodded. It's the only way to be sure, I agreed, managing to conceal my reluctance tolerably well, I believed. I was not quite sure whether I detected the ghost of a vindictive smile on the tech priest's face. Conditions outside were even worse than I could possibly have imagined. The snow continued to flurry all around us, driven by a wind keener than an Eldar witch's flensing knife, and I found my eyes shutting reflexively before I was a handful of paces from the cave mouth. With a thrill of panic, I realised I couldn't open them again. The wind-driven tears had frozen on my face and sealed them closed. I was just about to give way to the impulse to retrace my steps, a sure way of stumbling to my death down a crevice or terminal hypothermia away from the vigilance of my companions, when a reassuring arm settled across my shoulders. I inhaled Jürgen's acrid odour gratefully, as though it were the bouquet of a fine vintage, mildly surprised to find that my nose was still working. Hold on, Commissar. Something settled across my face, and the stinging in my eyes abated a little. I blinked them clear, forcing them stickily apart, feeling the partially melted ice crystals slither around the corners of my eye sockets. Jürgen's face came blearily into focus, the portion of it between his scarf and thick fur hat obscured by a pair of snow goggles identical to the ones I now realised were protecting my own sight. That should do it. Thank you, Jürgen, I managed to force out through practically immobilised face muscles. His scarf twitched as though concealing a smile. Lucky I usually carry a spare. That was the closest he would ever come to uttering a reproof, but he had every right to do so, of course. The goggles were standard kit in a Valhallan regiment, and I had a pair of my own packed away somewhere in my quarters, but it had never occurred to me I might need them in the depths of the mine where whiteout conditions weren't exactly common. So once again, I had cause to thank the Emperor for my aged streak of thoroughness. To my complete lack of surprise, every trooper in First Team had donned a pair as well, but, like Jürgen, these conditions were common to them. Warp it. Judging by their body language, most of them were actually enjoying these hellish temperatures. Chill enough for you, sir? Margot asked cheerfully, seemingly genuinely unaware of just how intolerable I was finding it. Wouldn't mind a pot of Tanner about now, I conceded, deciding the best approach was game but suffering a little more than I was willing to admit, rather than a hell of a lot more. That way they'd keep a closer eye on me without resenting it. Wouldn't mind a brew myself, she admitted, before trotting away to take her turn and point. This is all a complete waste of time, you know, Logash grumbled. I swear I would have missed him entirely if he hadn't spoken. His white robe was almost invisible in the swirling snow, and only his pale face and metallic eyes appeared wholly in focus. He appeared to hang in the air in front of me like an extreme version of Mazarin's levitation act. If there were any more orcs around, they'll be kilometres away by now, or frozen to death. He was a fine one to talk, I thought, barely even seeming to notice the sub-zero temperatures. Once again, I found myself wondering precisely what that robe concealed. They're a lot more resilient than you might think, I pointed out, and Lunt nodded in passing. My grandfather found one frozen in a glacier once back home, left over from the invasions. When they got it back to their camp and thawed it out, it came back to life and tried to kill him. That's true, that's what he said. Him and every other Valhallan's grandfather, of course. The Orc in the Ice is one of the most popular folktales on the planet, but I doubted that Logash would know that, so I nodded confirmation.
One. And like many folktales, there may be an element of truth to it. Although there's no way to be sure, there are still occasional reports of solitary orcs being sighted in the Valhallan wilderness, sometimes even backed up by bodies. Chances are these are just corpses left over from the invasion preserved by the cold, but you can never take anything for granted where these creatures are concerned.
So I'd keep looking over my shoulder if I were you, I added. I can't be sure, but I think Lunt winked at me, enjoying winding up the outsider and treating me as if I was a Valhallan myself. Of course, I spent so much of my career serving with them, I often find that I've picked up something of their speech patterns, dietary preferences and so on. I suppose it's not all that surprising that they seem to have adopted me as one of their own in many ways.
One. Actually, given the relationship between most commissars and the troops they serve with, this is pretty remarkable. As so often in his memoirs, Kane gives himself far too little credit for his own achievements.
We're in a defile, all right, Griffin told me, glancing around at the barely visible topography. You can tell by the pattern of the snowflakes. They just looked like a swirling wall of white to me, but I nodded as though I understood. I didn't actually need to know, of course. One of the most important principles of leadership is knowing when to rely on the judgment of your subordinates, but it's always a good idea to look interested. Can you tell which way the orcs would have gone? I asked. She nodded. They won't have left any tracks we can follow in this blizzard, but that way, she gestured in what looked to me like a random direction, is closed off by the head of the valley. My best guess would be downslope. Fair enough, I decided. We'll check as far as the mouth of the defile. If there are any greenskins out here, we'll find them. If not, we can pull back and collapse the cave behind us. That might be difficult, she pointed out. We used most of our demo charges to seal the... whatever it was, back down the passage. We'll think of something, I said, with more confidence than I felt. The constant swirling of the snow was making me feel vaguely nauseous. The cold was cramping my stomach muscles painfully, and my head felt as though someone was squeezing it in a vice. The sooner we got this over with, the better. Jürgen still got the melter, and I'm sure our cog boyfriend will be able to point out a few weak spots in the ceiling. I suppose you're right, the sergeant said, and I glanced around, expecting some response from Logash. But the surly young tech priest had vanished into the storm as thoroughly as though he'd never even existed.